Welcome to the Victory Show.
Welcome to the Victory Show, where seven-figure founders, entrepreneurs, and executives reveal the real playbook behind scaling past that first million in recurring revenue. We go beyond the highlight reel into the hard lessons, the costly mistakes, and the key growth inflection points, and the human decisions that shape those numbers. Here's the twist. Every conversation we have becomes a chapter in my Victory book series, so the next generation of builders doesn't have to start from scratch. My guest today, Roy DeQuina, is a serial entrepreneur, venturer, who thrives at the collision point of culture, technology, and design, and helps founders build brands and backends that hold up when the spotlight fades. Known for his strategically winging it mindset, Roy doesn't just chase product market fit. He helps leaders craft a point of view that actually scales and then engineers the structure that will support that. So whether he's deep in systems thinking or coaching founders through identity crisis moments, Roy brings clarity, creative edge, and grounded execution. So if you've ever launched something real, or you plan to, this is going to be a fantastic conversation. Roy, thanks for being here.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you, Travis.
So I always like to ask the question, did you choose entrepreneurship or did it choose you?
Oh, I don't know, man. I think out of scarcity, out of survival, it sort of, we picked each other in more ways that I can imagine. I think, you know, my first shot of entrepreneurship, I didn't even know what an entrepreneur was in college. I just remembered there was an opportunity to design t-shirts for a volleyball tournament, and I knew how to design, and then that it turned into, hey, I'll sponsor. So I made up a name, literally made up a name for this, you know, volleyball tournament. This was big in the 90s, you know, doing in college. So I did that, and next thing I did was, okay, I learned the skills on that. Next was in my fraternity. The graphic t-shirts were awful, so I designed something. I didn't have any money. So I pre-sold it. It was one way for me to make money. So I pre-sold this design on a piece of paper and they all bought it. So I figured, well, if it cost me $4 to make, I'm going to charge them 15 because that was the going rate of all those t-shirts. So I can order 3X what I can. And at that point, it was still dumb. There's no profit. If this doesn't work out, I'm flat broke, right? I'm going to have a bunch of t-shirts. But needless to say, within 2 hours, all the extra shirts that I ordered sold. So I was like, So that was it. That got me into my first business in college. And when I finished college, I ended up selling that business to a buddy of mine, you know, who.
Wow.
Yeah. So
first exit and you were barely 20.
I didn't even know it was called an exit. I just know I was going to make some money.
So how do you define an entrepreneur?
Entreventurer. So, you know, going through being an entrepreneur for, you know, 30 plus years, it's an adventure. You know, every business, every idea, whether good or bad, doesn't really matter. It's constantly a discovery, pain point, you know, understanding the pains, understanding some of the success, understanding the learn, everything around that it's a big adventure. You have to have the stomach for it, that's for sure. Because it's never an easy path. You know, you're not only a pathfinder, you got to create your own roads, you got to create your own thing. And when people are looking at you, mocking you, you know, you just bite your lip and just keep going if you really see something. So again, it's a true adventure so far for me. That's why I just
call it
entreventurer.
That sounds like a good title for a book right there.
Maybe.
What? So after you had your first successful exit, even though you didn't know it was an exit, was that it? Were you ruined at that point where you're like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go build another business now?
Oh, heck no. I did the whole work thing. I went to school, so I did the whole work thing and worked for for a company and did that for a while. And then, but although during that time, they were expanding and, you know, the late 90s into the .com, you know, I learned how to build websites, even though, you know, I was building little rinky-dink website in college. I started building, designing website. I didn't even know there was a career in design. So I was just doing it for the company, having a good time. So, and then they asked me to design them a logo. I was like, sure. why not? And I'm just thinking, oh, give me a 12 pack. That would have been fine. And they said, well, we can't really afford it. So I figured, I was about to say, dude, just give me a 12 pack, maybe a burrito, I'll be good. It's like, we can only afford, about 3 grand. I'm like, I literally paused, and I don't know how composed I was. I was like, okay, well, I usually start at five, right? 5 grand. And oh, how about we split the difference? I'll pay you four. Okay. That was done. And I realized, what is this thing? So yeah, so again, it's that was part of the learning and the journey is at that time, fake it till you make it. That was my path at that moment. So yeah, I mean, it's just kind of putting yourself out there and trusting that you have the skill. Actually, you got to believe in yourself and have enough drive to see it through. And skills will come. And if it's not your skill set, there's always somebody out there better than you. You hire them. You charge enough, or at least make enough, understand your numbers. You charge enough so you can bring somebody on. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. All right, so let's talk about that because we were speaking earlier and you said something that I thought, you're asking like what attracted to invite you on the show and be part of this project. And it was all the stuff I saw with you doing systems, specifically systems that will scale and not break. So I want to talk about that, but I don't want to back up because you just said something important, which is charge enough that you can bring somebody on to hire. And one of the mistakes that a lot of entrepreneurs will make, especially solopreneurs, is they put wrong people in the wrong seat. So if you're a solopreneur or have a team of one or two, how do you know who's the most important hire to start with?
Well, the way I've always done it is whatever business, whatever idea, I have to be an expert at that segment, right? Or that industry or whatever it is I'm offering. I have to know every nook and cranny, if it's finance, I got to understand the economics around it, how to make money and all that. If it's operations, if it's a product, you have to understand manufacturing, lead time, all that. You got to understand everything, right? You don't have to be an expert at it. You just have to really understand it. And then you start to look for, okay, which one's going to take them? Which one takes me out of my game the most? Let's just keep it simple. Let's say it's finance, right? Bookkeeping. Well, there are softwares out there that can do all this, QuickBooks being one of them. So you outsource bookkeeping, right? Because you kind of understand it. You slowly remove yourself from anything that drags you, that takes so much time. In the beginning, it's an investment in your time to understand your business and what business you're trying to come up with. Then you slowly remove yourself, and you just have to trust that who you bring in are really good at what they do. Don't bring in your cousin who says, hey, I'm good at math, because just because you're good at math doesn't mean you understand accounting, or your uncle who says, hey, I'm really good at hiring or whatever. It's hard. So you have to really understand how your business and where you want your business to go, and then you slowly remove yourself and bring people in. So
I think that's a
the
good
best one
one.
that you could do it is find somebody that's a hustle, that wants to make money. That's when you want to bring in is sales, because your business is nothing without transactions and without sales. But if you can find someone to do that, just to at least do the follow-up, make sure the customer's happy, things like that, you get returning customers and whatnot. But sales would be a good one to sort of outsource.
Yep. And that's the thing too. If you've ever met a really good sales guy, like they're just like they're so good at it. But
They're good.
it's not that they're just good at it, they just love it.
Oh, that's it. That's the key thing. They have to find that guy who just loves to say, who loves to talk. Then you can say, oh, this guy can close. That's it. That's when it
Got
happens.
guys that are obsessed about human psychology.
That's right. That's right. And you know them. You've seen them when you go hanging out at the bar. They're constantly talking. So they're out there. They're easier to, spot more than anything. So bring them on. And the thing, you incentivize them. I learned this from a buddy of mine who I mentioned earlier. Is a buddy of mine. It's like, look, if you find somebody good like that, you incentivize them. Let them be part of the upside, because they will work 10 times harder. They don't have to take the risk of being the entrepreneur, the business owner, but they can feel like they are in the success because they get to make that success for them, and you go along for the ride. So I've really shifted my mindset when it comes to that.
And so how did that show up in your business when you took that mindset on?
Well, you know, it obviously traverses all different types of space. Having that allows me to, not only take time away from those tasks, but also gives me opportunity now to either look for new opportunity, look for new things, new segments, new customer base, or improve the existing company, right? Because at the end of the day, you are the architect of your business. You can't outsource the architect unless you are the architect. That's the systems layer. Once you figure that out, once you have a little bit of that running for you, it's not going to be perfect. There's different stages of businesses, but once you have that at least figured out, just know that that might not be the final company. That's just a stage of the company where you're at,
Yeah. And I think that's important, is to realize that there's stages.
Oh yeah.
I think everybody thinks, oh, if I can scale to $10 million a year, all my problems will be solved. And it's like, no, you just have much bigger problems.
Oh yeah. Again, another buddy, my another successful entrepreneur. And again, I learned a lot from buddies that are entrepreneurs successful. And he said, "You know what, Roy? The difference between your business and my business, and are the zeros. That's the only difference. The more zeros you add in your revenue or your income, the headache is also that. But our problems are exactly the same. It's just different magnitude." Because you want more money, yeah, but you also your headache is also a lot heavier. But it's the same thing. We both have the same stress, it's just slightly different. So that was a really interesting perspective for me. It's like, okay, back in the days, the big number to hit was 1 million, right? Getting to 1 million is hard, extremely hard. Getting to your second million is probably twice as hard to get to the 1 million. It's not until you get to your 5 million after that, okay, there's a growth system here. I can grow this a little bit more because from 5 to 7 to 8 to 9, it gets a little bit easier. Today, I think what'd you say now the threshold is 10 million, right? Anyone can get to 1 to 2 to 3, but to get to the 10, which is usually the barometer there, the target's always between, one ARR, right? And for, or one MRR, sorry, excuse me, monthly to get to that 10 million mark, that's very hard. That's what not a lot of people will do it. Now, to get to 20 million, that's hard. That's extremely hard. And then once you hit, the 50 to 60, 70, at that point you have a process, you have a system that sort of works. Then you just add in more people. If it's the main driver is sales, you just add six more guys, seven more guys, or whatever the number is to get to those numbers you're trying to hit.
I love it. So, what are some of the biggest mistakes that, let's say companies that are, half a million to a million or getting close to a million, what are some of the bigger mistakes you've seen companies make, especially when it comes to the systems, putting systems in place?
Well, it's not just the companies and founders that I've seen. I'm part of that, right? Is ego. That's the biggest mistake. Is you're in the way. I'm advising a small company right now, and the first thing I say, you're the bottleneck, dude. It keeps coming back to you. If you're the bottleneck, then there's your problem. Your fishbowl is only gonna be as big as where you can go with, right? Because you don't have the certain skill set. You need to release that to the certain teams and delegate and let them screw up. They have to screw up. You screwed up a bunch of times. The good news, I was there to help you get out of some of those screw ups, right? But so now it's your job to help your team, let them screw up. Because once they screw up, now they take that becomes their own dignity, where it was like, I don't want to do that, not just for the company because I'm getting paid, but for myself, right? Like they want to grow, they want to thrive. So that's I would say I would put that as number one. That was one of my biggest learning, is how do I get out of my own way and grow. Other areas from external, not listening to advisors, not listening to people that, again, that still falls into the ego because they think they have what it takes to, the next whatever, Uber or Facebook. That they're not listening to people smarter than them. Believe it or not, in this entrepreneurial world and all the business owners and whatnot, we want to help because we've been there. We felt the pain. We got battle scars. I can still taste, the blood in our, you know, in our system. It was like, wow, that hurt a lot, but you know, but I'm alive. So that's one, is not taking advice, people who's been successful or at least have a really good mindset. And probably obviously the other one is not understanding what a business is. You know, there's a great book, it's still relevant today, Michael Gerber, The E-Myth, right? Still very, I think it was written by in the 80s, I would say, somewhere around there, right?
Yeah, late
It's
80s, early 90s.
early 80s. Yeah, that's right. It's and you know, a friend turned me into that book, and my mind just opened up. I was like, holy crap, wow. Money in, money out. It's a lot simpler, you know, if you understand the mechanics of what a business is, you know, from a lemonade stand into a multi-billion dollar tech company, right? It's the system. There's a, yeah, it gets a lot more complicated because each system that Michael Gerber has addressed, there are microsystems within one. And then when you go into that micro, there's more micro. So again, that's that exponential growth and exponential scale model. You get deeper and deeper. You now have to start to fix things within or reformat a little bit so that your business can grow. So it's about really understanding what mechanics you want out of your business, understanding business and how your business should be ran. So, yeah.
I love it. So, what do you mean when you say you need to adapt a strategically winging it mindset?
Well, you know, I love early stage. I love foundry level approach, where it's mostly about art and science. That's how I define it. It's art and science in the beginning, you know, at early stage, all the way to growth stage. Strategically winging it, you should have, you know, people should have a general vision, a general North Star, right? And then work your way backwards from that North Star. How am I going to get there, right? I'm going to keep it simple, right? We need to get to the moon. Well, how do we need to get to the moon? Well, we need to A, get a rocket ship, right? We need to understand now science. So all these things have to come into play. That's a general strategy. You know, we need to build this, da 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 da. Again, using Elon Musk's, you know, example, like he was winging it. He went to the Russian, bought old missiles because he figured I can't afford it. There's not a lot of money. So the winging it, really, that's where the art comes from. You know, that's where you're like, okay, use your instincts, use everything you've learned. But you need to have a strategy on how to get there, you know. You know, what are the ways, what are the paths to get there? The rest is all meandering. It's that messy in between. Figure it out. It's okay if that didn't work. Go to the next one. Keep going. But at least you have that North Star. You have a path. You have a vision on how to get there. That's where the strategy comes in, and the rest is just you're winging it until you get there. So that's how I like to envision what strategically winging it looks like. You
I
don't know
love
until you know. So.
Well, and that makes sense. And I, you know, I, Elon's a good example of that, of, how can we do this cheaper? Maybe we can buy some old missiles and then we just convert them.
That's right. That's right. You know, I love the early stage of you know, the strategy, you know, understanding it, and then you start to ask the what if, right? The what if we buy cheaper missiles, right? What if we don't build this from ground up? What if we just go buy used car, you know, used parts and see what happens? Because A, they're probably going to get rid of it. We can get it for a deal. It's not going to be your final product, you know? Like, I'm sure when SpaceX started where they're at today, you know, it was just faking it. Or not, I shouldn't say faking it, you know, I think he's a bit more advanced than that, but it was just really just like, let's see how this can do. Let's start here. It ain't, you know. Again, that's where the ego is removed. Like, no,
It's
this is the
interesting,
first
right? When
one.
you bring in, like, how did we get to the moon in the first place? We had a decade of failures. And yet, some point in time, NASA stopped. They're like, oh, we can't go through the failure phase. That's embarrassing.
That's right.
Whereas Elon came along and was like,
Don't
how many
care.
missiles did they blow up? And everybody was like, and I think he had an interview where he was just like, oh yeah, we were down to our last rocket. And it was like, if this rocket didn't work, like that was it. SpaceX was done. And that was the one that finally worked and put them
That's
on the
right.
map. And then they got all their contracts. And
That's right.
but he just brought that, like, every time you saw him, when a rocket would blow up, and he'd be, okay, what did we learn from this one?
Right.
Right.
Well,
And somebody
he didn't
just,
care about the embarrassment, right? And we said that a little earlier about don't be embarrassed about your first one you get out there, you know. It's having the courage and just that go-to attitude. It's like, you know what? I think I'm gonna go for it. Let's keep going. We have this last one. You know, you could say the same thing about the Wright brothers, right? They've tried multiple ways and they didn't have the advanced technology that we have today, the advanced materials. They had wood and a bicycle, wood and some paper, I think,
Canvas.
canvas to make something fly, you know? And is because they just keep going. And you know, I don't know the full story, but I'm sure that wasn't their first product that they tried to make it fly. It's got to be a few, but they kept going. So.
Yeah, I heard a speaker a while back, and he runs an 8-figure business, and he was just like, yeah, he's like somewhere in the last couple of decades, like, and he said it's pretty with adults, it's, you know, we get to the ego to a point where, you know, when we're kids, we realize like, oh, I'm going to do something, but I just have to keep doing it and I'll get better. And you know, for whatever reason, like we hit our mid-20s, 30s, and we suddenly think, oh, I don't need to learn stuff. I should be able to do it, right? And he's like, but the reality is that when you're doing something new, like you're going to suck at it. And most people don't want to suck in front of other people. So that embarrassment, they won't do it. And he's like, but the thing is like, you suck at it and you suck at it and you suck at it. And eventually you don't, you suck less and less. And he's like, and then eventually you suck so little, you're actually good.
That's right. No, 100%. But all that time that you keep sucking at everything, that's all learned. If you don't learn from it, you keep making the same mistake. That's on you, right? That is truly on you. I was interviewed one time by a student, and I was asked, hey, like what's success? Like, how do you define success? Right? I was asked. I was like, well, it's pretty simple for me specifically. I define my success based on the amount of failures I've achieved. And I have to fail so many times and suck less every single time I get out of it, because to me, every one of those failures are less and less, sucking at whatever it is I failed at. And I see those things as achievements because in order to get, you don't suck anymore. Yeah, that's an achievement. I don't suck at this anymore versus, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, or 5 months ago, I sucked. Today, that's an achievement. I don't suck at this anymore. So again, you have to go through all those little phases. That to me, that's as an individual growth, right? And if you can bring that same principle or mindset into a company, it's okay if you fail. It's okay. And this is where you enroll other people to let them fail as well, because when you fail, you have company in misery, right? You guys can just, okay, that sucked. Let's take a break now. All right, let's go back tomorrow. Let's fresh start. Let's go. And then you go again. Sure, the likelihood of failing is going to fail again, but you're not going to do the same mistake. So to me, those are achievements. Those are the measure of success for me. Not that you hit the lotto or, again, all the success stories of, founders out there, and all of a sudden you just hear the glory. You don't really hear all the pain that to get to that
Yeah.
glory. So
So we should write about a book about that. The pain of success.
that's right. That's right.
The behind the
Success.
scenes stories that you know, unicorns never that never were made public.
That's right. Exactly. To me, that is a great book because that's gonna wake up a lot of a lot of people. And you sort of tapped into something that I wanted to double click. Why do when you get to a certain, I think when you're in your 20s that you think you got it all figured out, da da da, you stop learning to say, you know what? And again, I got nothing against it, but just how our education system is designed today, it's designed for you to get grades, to win, do the whole thing to get there. And by the time you graduate, you have this big debt in school or mom and dad pay for or whatever. You're supposed to be awesome. No, you ain't, bro. No, you're not, man. You're just getting started. Everything was like you were graded. You had 5 months to submit a report. Yeah, you have 4 days. You have 4 hours to submit it. It's supposed to be great. No, you're not gonna know it. And that I think that's a challenge of this current generation right now. And again, you guys can mock me, but the certain generation is that they've been given a lot of opportunities and ways to, get through school, and go through the academic route, which is, again, I'm not knocking it, but the pain of really understanding, it doesn't happen until you're done with school. So that's when the real learning is.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, intern means, and again, I don't want to get, get this whole thing with employment law, but intern back then is you're for free.
Yeah.
Today they want almost six figures as an intern. I'm like, wait, wait, what? How's that? Like, I have to
I want
pay
you to pay
you.
me to make a bunch of mistakes to learn. And it's like,
Right.
no, I'm going to pay you nothing. And
No.
your pay is that you get to learn.
Right. Like, I would rather say, hey, you're gonna go to college, tell you what. You're about to go pay about 100 grand in school. Tell you, once you give me that money, I'll hang on to it. I'll pay you that money for in return. So instead of, going to school, you're gonna learn real life, real world situation and grow for it much, much faster and truncate the whole thing. And then you could learn anything you want right now online. So, anyways, but I'm not, let's not get into that. That's a whole
No,
nother.
it's interesting. I've been having a conversation with somebody maybe three interviews ago where we were talking about, like, for me, and look, I got a master's degree, right? I've gone through the highest levels, but it's getting to the point where, like, how do you justify the one? I went to an Ivy League school, and when I went there, it was 20,000 a year, and that was considered outrageous. And the last time I checked, they're now 70,000 a year. And I was like, $300,000 for the degree. And a lot, they have one of the top acting programs. And I'm like,
Wow.
somebody's gonna spend $300,000 on an acting program. And my brain goes, that's $300,000 budgeted movies. Like, just go through that. You'll learn way more.
Right. Exactly. Like, I mean, again, it just depends on the mindset, right? What you
Well, like you
want.
said, right? It's also the culture. Like, for the longest
That's
time,
right.
the college degrees meant something, and somewhere along the I guess the social media generation has shifted that perspective a little bit. But it's interesting now to see some of the pushback too, where a lot of people are just going straight into trades. But all
Yeah.
right, with your work that you've done, because you've worked with a lot of leaders and you obviously consult, like, what are, like, three things when you're working with somebody you can look at them and go, oh yeah, this. That, like, what three traits that you can see in somebody where you know, like, they're going to be a great leader, and what are three traits you'll see in someone where you're going, oh, this is a 50-50 as whether or not they're gonna succeed.
Yeah. So we'll start with the success first, right? Actually, I'm gonna start with the ones I was like, oof, I don't know if I want to work with this guy. Number one is always goes back to the ego. You want to look at this. Can this person actually do they talk too much? Do they or are they more curious about learn, understand to learn, right? Because they don't they if they were if they know everything, why are you talking to me? Right, you should be out there, right? You'd be in front of Time Magazine, so it's about that and understanding that. The other thing I look at when it comes to founders or people in business that has a less chance of succeeding is are they or leader, how do they view their colleagues? How do they treat them? Is it, it's okay to be a great, you can still be a great, pretty stern, disciplined leader to your team, but how do you treat them? Do you treat them with humanity, with dignity, and an opportunity to grow? Again, mentorship or, to certain degrees. If I don't see that, that's a reflection at the systems level of an organization, of a company. If that's a DNA that's plugged in at the human level, at the leadership level, trust me, that is how it the op on the operations side, that's how it's going to be built. That's the DNA of a company. And so
You mean how people are when they're, like, just starting out, is how they're going to be magnified when they're
that's
very
right. Oh,
successful?
100%, 100%, right? Let's think of the lotto winners, right? If they don't have financial literacy, they don't understand it. You might get this lump sum of money, but they end up becoming more broke than they first
Do you
started.
know what's funny? When I worked in Hollywood, this was like one of the most shocking things for me when I got into the industry after a while, is that at the very bottom levels, like just getting started, people trying to across the board, directors, writers, actors, crew people, right? Very few jerks. You get into the middle, and man, it's just like packs of assholes. And then you get up into the top levels, very few. Then there's a few,
Yeah.
right? But majority is like, you get up to the top, everybody's super nice and friendly. And I was just so funny to me. It was just like that those that it wasn't at the top and bottom. It was like it would only be in the middle. And I thought that was also very telling, because that mentality and that the way they treated people is what kept them stuck in the middle.
That's right. No, that's 100% correct because they have enough quote unquote success and clout and recognition, but not to a point where they know who they really are. Like, I don't need to be an asshole. I don't need to do this because A, I'm well respected and well understood. I don't have to prove anything. That's what a lot of them to be an asshole. It's the same thing actually in business, right? You have guys that are, you know, they flaunt everything, they show everything, and then you have the super ultra successful guys. They look like they're, you know, they're bums. Like they're just casual, just chill, right? And it was like, technically, you should be the asshole, but you know, it's in that middle, you know.
When I used to do stand-up comedy, and my comedy coach, he's very successful. He makes 300,000 a year doing stand-up comedy, which is unheard of.
Wow.
We used to joke that he should write a book called How to Be the Richest Comedian No One's Ever Heard
That's cool.
Of. But he said something that's always stuck with me. And somebody was doing something, and they were being a little bit arrogant. And he's like, "Look, guys," he's like, "you need to be especially careful as your star is rising of being nice and amazing to everybody." And he's like, "Because those are the people you're passing on the way up are going to be the ones hiring you when you're on the way back down."
That's
And
right.
he's like, "So if you're a jerk going up and they start to come down," he's like, "all those people are going to be cheering that, and there's going to be no one catching you, and it's going to be a hard fall." And I just always thought about that. And you look in the TV world to some of the people, and you're like, "Oh my God, that is so true."
Oh my
And
God. I
you know,
had
it's
that
the same
exact.
in the business, right? I mean, if you're an entrepreneur and you're doing great and you're being nice, and then you get into trouble, like you can go and ask for help. But if you're a jerk and you get in trouble, people are like, "I'm gonna help you. Forget it." No.
Well, no, the funny thing is, I had that. It's funny you mentioned that. It made me creep a little because I had the exact same experience. So, you know, when after school, I was working in this profession and somehow I wanted to be in design, right? So I ventured out. I was like, okay, what is the design shit? Could I actually make a career out of it? Because I was looking for a career shift. And I went into this one firm, which I don't think they're no longer in business, a design firm out in Hollywood. And I went in with a suit and tie and I did not look the part. I had this portfolio, right? Portfolio, I'm air quoting. And this is, again, this is part of the learning. It was a Wilhelmina book, you know, for models. But to me, it was, hey, it's a good looking book. It's light blue. It's got, you could put your, my graphics in there. I had no idea what a Wilhelmina is. You know, I know. So I literally went in there with a Wilhelmina book, suit and tie. And, you know, this design firm was like, oh, place is kind of cool. I gave it to this art director, creative director. I think, well, whatever. I think it was an art. I forget what it was. Anyways, I went in there, showed him. He opened the book. First, I could see him. He's got this little smirk, all right? Because he thought it was like a modeling thing because it's a Wilhelmina. And he opened it, it's a bunch of graphic design. He looked at me and was like, oh, you're here to be a designer? And I was like, yeah. Right? I was like, yeah, I was kind of. So, anyways, he was opening it. So he said, look, I can see you have some talent. I think you should really go back to school. I was like, man, I don't want to go back to fucking school. Like, that's the last thing I want to do right now, thinking of the expenses and all that. And it's like, and then this is where I went bold. I was like, you know what? How about this? I'll look into school, see what that would look like. But for right now, why don't I work for free? Why don't I intern? I will come in 3 days a week, you know? So I did. I learned everything in design. I literally was a sponge, right? Let's fast forward 2, 3 years later. Now, you know, I'm working for another agency, another firm, blah, blah, blah. And again, I was, you know, I was into web. And so I needed someone to help me do it. At that point, I was kind of like art director already and whatnot. And then, hey, they asked me, one of the owners said, hey, I need to interview this web guy. So I look at the resume. I was like, why does this name sound familiar? And I looked at where his resume. I said, "Oh shit, this is that guy." And I told him the story. Remember when you guys interviewed me? Da, 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 da. I was like, "Wait, that's the guy?" He's like, "Yeah." Then you need to do the interview. So I did. I did the interview. So blah 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 blah. I told him, "Hey, you don't remember me, do you?" Right? And I was like, "No, why? No, we met before." So he got a little excited because, you know, potential colleague. It's like, "Yeah, no, da, 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 da." And I was like, "Do you do web?" And it's like, no, I don't. And I was like, have you considered maybe going back to school for that? So, and he was like, I don't think he remembered he told me that, about to go back to school. But I was just like, it was a little bit of example. Like, he was kind of, It was kind of jerkish to me going up, right?
That's
And then
funny.
when he was coming down, I was like, be careful because the tables have turned. I got to interview you now. Of course, I didn't hire him because he didn't have any web experience. So that was just
He
no sense.
didn't offer to come into work for 3 days a week.
No, of course not. I
Yeah,
see, that would have been a nail in the coffin. It's like, but I am willing to teach you if you come in 3 days a week. I should have. You know what? I should have done that, but I think that
that's
would have been
funny.
too far.
No, I love it. All right, this has been a fantastic conversation. I think so. For anyone who's watching this or listening to this or reading the chapter in the book, and maybe in that point where they're feeling a little messy in their business, where do you point people to start to get a foundational understanding of how to apply systems in their business?
Again, depending on the industry, number one is look for a online. There's so many things to learn. So really understand your industry. Number one, just know that. Like that's your own homework right there. Your second homework is find someone that could really mentor you and help you in the same industry. Or I'll even challenge, find someone in the industry and also find a different industry because that's another perspective, right? And third, I would say is once you have those two sort of information, break your business. Now try to break your business. Try to break your thinking. Try to break everything you know about your business because you have now newfound information. If you can break it, you don't have a business, right? If you somehow say, oh shit, this thing breaks, but this is actually strong. Like it works. My mentors that it validates it, then you know what your potentially core business is gonna be. So preserve that. Then go back to first principle design, redesign it, re-architect your system to see what it would take now to the next stage, depending on what stage you are. If you want to get into the scale level, then there's another growth level in this new sort of change that you're doing or this slight pivot that you've done. So don't be afraid, it's about burning the ship, right? Don't be afraid to burn your ship. Don't be afraid to destroy. Don't be, you're not necessarily going to do it, but like go in the mindset of, how am I going to break this thing? Because if you don't try to break it, your competitor, somebody else will, right? And that's it. You'll be done. So, that's how I've done it. That's how I've pivoted. And that's how I'm continue to learn and develop and meet new people and understand things is how do I burn the ship right now? It keeps me motivated, keeps me challenged that I don't know everything. Because if I could burn it, I can destroy it. Then, wow. What can I do today so that it's defensible and durable in the long run, right? So it's not just about the hype because we've seen those brands, we've seen those companies. Hype, and where are they now?
Yep. Look, not even just hype. I mean, even hype and legacy, right? How old was Lehman Brothers? 108 years old. And
That's right. That's right.
they're like, in this country, like 100-year-old business is like they're not going anywhere. And then one day they were gone.
That's right. That's right. Again, even something even more modern than that, this is a big lesson, the Blockbuster Netflix thing, right? And the leadership did not want to know. And again, if they would have really paid attention to the consumer, a different DNA of audience streaming, whether technology was ready or not, because it wasn't ready, but it became ready when. And all Netflix did was buy time. Let's ship you a bunch of DVDs, which I was a subscriber. Because I
I
don't go to
was.
Blockbuster anymore.
Yeah, it was the same. My mentor, his name was Jonathan Crane, and he was Travolta's manager. He produced some of the biggest movies of all time. And he was really forward thinking in a lot of things that he did in Hollywood. But the one thing I remember him saying in 2009 or 10, as he's like, yeah, I just don't really see streaming going anywhere. And it was because of him. He was looking at the technology going like, I've tried it. It's just a disaster every time we've tried it for the last 3 years. And so his experience was, but he didn't understand enough about the technology to realize like, oh, eventually it will catch up. Right. And what's funny is if you go back to that same period of time, maybe 2004 or five, and you listen to Ben Affleck talking about streaming. And everybody was crapping all over it. And he was like, that's the wave of the future. And here's why. And you see, and then like everything he talked about is what happened. And I was like, dude, that guy was like, it was smart.
It was smart, but I mean, I don't know if you know, like the recent movie they produced and put onto Netflix is also a new flip. I don't know if you knew about it. It's called The Rip.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that? I mean,
Well,
big.
no, I saw the I know of the movie, obviously, but.
I mean, again, don't, it's not verbatim. I'm just going to paraphrase. So basically, I read somewhere or saw something quickly about how they challenge Netflix to say, look, we're going to produce this, and the only revenue we're going to get is based on viewership, right? It's something like that. Again, I don't know that industry well enough. So they both took a gamble and they're sharing all the profits
Yeah,
with
their production
the
studio shares with their crew.
that's right, which Netflix doesn't. And again, that's not knocking Netflix, that's their business model. It is what it is. What another business saying, hey, we want to share it with the crew.
Yeah.
As we make this money, rising tide lifts all
Yeah.
boats, right? We all go
Yeah.
together. And the fact that they forgo a lot of the stuff to produce the
I mean, I
movie.
guess it helps when you're worth like $200 million to then go, you know what? I think we should share with our crew.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, but they didn't have that back then, right? We saw both Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. They hustled, right?
Yeah.
They had the
Yeah.
grit to go for it. They made some bad one, you know. Was it Jiggly, Giggly, or whatever it was? That was a terrible one.
Geely.
Geely or whatever, yeah. But you know, that's just the learning of that, you know, whether you're entertainment
Look,
or.
it's always funny to me when people like poo-poo on the movies and they're like, "Oh, that movie sucked." And then it's just like, "Yeah, but like, you know, if it, and this one didn't really come up like with Geely, that was a good one, right? Martin Brest is was a, he's a genius director. Genius. He's done some amazing movies. That was the last movie he ever did, but he has since talked about how he had a vision for the movie. He found that he and this guy worked on the script, and then they were in the middle of the script, and the studio panicked, and the studio came in and rewrote everything. And so halfway through, and then they were like, "You can't edit it. We're going to edit it." And so that's, you know, so whenever I see a really bad movie, I'm always like, okay, at what point did the studio step in or some executive step in and take over and wreck it? Not to say that directors, I think, should always have kind of final cut. You know, I think you can make the argument that some of Martin Scorsese's movies on Netflix could have used an executive coming in going, "I don't think we need that extra hour and a half."
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But
But
yeah, but that is the thing, right? This is and where I was going with that is it's just like how many entrepreneurs have launched a product that hasn't worked, right? So you don't hit a you don't hit a 1,000, right? So you just do the best that you can based on what you know and you go forward. So if somebody's wants to reach out to you and possibly hire you for some consulting or coaching, like where do they track you down?
Well, you can obviously find me on LinkedIn, Roy DeKina, and I believe I'm the only Roy DeKina, although there's another one somewhere in another part of the planet, but it's not active. But I'm the only
So we want the
one.
Roy DeKina in you know, Redondo Beach.
I'm the Roy DeKina in Los Angeles. Los Angeles, but I do live in Redondo Beach. But yeah, you just find me on LinkedIn. It's the easiest way to find me, especially on a open platform like this. And then if there's whether it be ideas or whether it be you mentioned consulting. Yeah, you know, I'm happy to. I take on consulting, but again, it's very specific because I'm kind of busy on my regular things that I do in building
Sure.
tech startups. So it has to really make sense. I have to have a deep knowledge into the space. But you know, I'm always open for a conversation. To me, at this point of my life, I want to work with someone I really enjoy. Because I like to see it like we're in the same foxhole, right? We have
Yeah.
to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
You have your set of tools, you have your set of, armory that you have. I got mine, I got specialty, but just know that this vantage point, no one's gonna get your back. No one's gonna get you, right? I got your back. You better have my back. So I gotta know that you have my back, and especially, you know, when it comes to consulting, because consultants have, I don't even like that word because when I consult, sounds like I'm just talking to them and giving them strategy. No, I like to roll up my sleeves. I like to be part of it. And the first thing I really do is understand the business system that's in there. And then I'll absorb it. I'll look at it and I'll just say, how do I break this? You know, is there a simpler format? Is there a lazy way to do this? Because, you know, with every capabilities that we have today, there's automation and whatnot. There's a lot of fat that needs to be trimmed in certain organizations, you know. Again, no need to mention any names, but you know, it happens, right? You grow too fast from a lemonade stand, all of a sudden, you're Minute Maid, and like you can grow fast, and that's a great thing to have.
Sprinkles.
Sprinkles, exactly.
Went
Exactly.
from, the kitchen to globally to now it doesn't
Right.
exist anymore.
Right. That's right. You know, the timing was right for sprinkles, or timing was right for cupcakes. And they just had a very different, got a great brand, great, you know, so. Yeah, so yeah, it just to me, it's going back to, you know, am I the right person in this seat that you guys are bringing on? If you guys are gonna want me to do this, it doesn't feel like it's, for me, it doesn't feel like it's the, I'm on the right seat. I usually don't get involved. It's like, hey, listen, I can happy to make some recommendations, or I know someone who's perfect for this, you know, because my time is not so much as value. My time is my time. You know, I want to
Yeah.
do it, you know,
No, I'm the
time.
same way when it comes to people reaching out asking for help with books.
Yeah.
I'm not a good fit for everybody, but I know a lot of people, so I'm saying like, I'll have a conversation. If I can't help you, I can at least point you in the right direction because I know
That's right. That's right.
a lot of people that do it. So it's just like any industry, right?
That's right.
So,
That's right. So,
well, Roy, thank you so much for your time. This has been a
pleasure.
fantastic conversation. I certainly appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate this, Travis. All right.